after a long absence, Dave and I are finally back in the studio for this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry. Took a little vacation time with the family, went back east. I posted a video on social media and I said, hey, whoever knows this spot, it's a super distinct area, snorkeling area, we'll give you a hat or we'll send you a hat. I think I owe Logan one for his. What was his first comment?
His first comment was the ocean.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
And then his second one was the fishing tank.
Saltwater tank at Shields. Yeah, yeah. All right, Logan. Yeah. Logan, we'll get you a hat. And then who else? Oh, I got some texts on it. Nobody got it right. Aaron Lamfonte from Battleborn Bird Dogs, he messaged us. He knew I was in the Keys. So his answer was just going to be the Florida Keys. And I said, now you got to be a little more specific, but there's two areas down there for anybody that's been to the Keys. One is Hens and Chickens. One is Alligator Reef Lighthouse. Alligator Reef Lighthouse is super, super distinct. And it is a functioning lighthouse out there because you're 4 or 5 miles offshore and it is still shipwreck central. You go from like the ocean channel to that reef.
Swim in the chicken and hen zone, but
hens and chickens.
You name something, alligators or sharks, I'm gonna be a beach viewer.
Well, that's what. So hey, I got a good story. We're down there, and a guy on a boat, kind of cruising around, goes, "Hey, nurse shark over there." You know, he's pointing. His buddy turned into Jesus of Nazareth and ran out of the water to get back on the boat. And before I knew what was going on, Alice was in the water swimming after the thing. I got some videos of that. I got Madeline. So for some desert-dwelling inland critters, my kids did phenomenal down there.
Well, then your daughter's got bigger balls than I do, that's for sure.
Madeline, her obsession was the barracuda. Because school up in like, you know, a couple dozen of the things. Yeah. And they'll school up behind stuff and just kind of hang out. And that was Madeline's jam, was swimming around with the barracudas.
I bet you that was a lot of fun, especially for the kids, you know, coming from this desert dwelling world that we live in. And then throwing them into the ocean and the coast and a completely different environment, completely different set of wildlife, everything.
Yes. Yep.
That had to have been so cool. Did you guys see any like seals or anything?
No, we saw some manatees. But they're pretty protected. We did some cruising around in the mangroves. So saw all the typical the game fish stuff, snook,
how
tarpon.
Were the bugs?
No bugs.
None?
No. Keys are awesome for that, Dave.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Just checking.
It is the closest to a tropical paradise in the contiguous lower 48 that you will find. And it is absolutely incredible. One of my favorite places. I grew up, when I was a kid, we used to go down there. So yeah, just phenomenal trip. But as time goes on, I will roll out some more footage, snorkeling stuff, the shark video, stuff like that. But
that'd be cool.
We were talking about this. You got 3D archery stuff coming up nonstop.
Oh yeah.
What's rolling out for you?
So I will be in Fresno for the Fresno Safari shoot, and then straight up to Redding for the national championships up at the NFAA outdoor championships at the Redding. After Redding, there's a local shoot here, Nevada shoot. I think I might be one of the Battle Mountain ones, and then up into Oregon to Cougar Mountain, and then the Bend shoot. So got some stuff going on. It's gonna be a good time. Make sure I can shoot my bow.
Well, you said you've been out doing prep and you feel pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been out shooting away pretty hard when the weather's been pretty decent the last couple weeks.
What are you shooting? Because you ditched the Darton, or you went back to Darton?
No. Well, I had the Darton. I got rid of the Darton, the Tri-Tech 35, and I am back to shooting my Athens.
Oh, okay.
My Athens Vista and Axis 35s.
Gotcha.
And then my hunting stuff is the 33s.
Okay.
So I don't know, they've just been shooting so well for me that I'm like, you know why? Change right now, because I'm shooting very well with those bows.
Yeah, hey, run those.
Heck yeah, you know.
For sure.
Just run them. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So that's, and normally we do this time of year, we do like a Redding prep episode and all that.
Yeah.
Everything's
moving so fast us. I mean, I can't believe we're almost at the middle, the end of April already. I mean, what is the deal?
And for the first, I was good 3 years in a row, something like that.
Yeah,
Four years in a row.
I know for sure for three.
And now this year, so I'm in town for a little bit here, and then I'm turning right around. I'm heading to Argentina
to go whack some dove.
To go shoot dove. I got invited on a group trip down to Argentina, so I took that opportunity. So I'm not doing Redding this year.
Yeah.
I'm going to go spend a little time in South America knocking around, hopefully clobbering some birds, but I don't know what it is. I feel like life has just, the treadmill button is getting mashed, and is just... Speeding up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you feel like there's every couple of days there's a little nitrous shot into your day and you're like, what? It's already Friday?
Which yeah.
I don't mind Fridays.
No.
Fridays are fine. Just
it's the Sunday night at 7 o'clock when you start going, oh, it's starting all over again.
Yeah.
Where'd that go?
Yeah. And then the weekends are so jammed with, you know, I've been doing a lot of hiking and then shooting my bow and then tuning the bows and getting stuff dialed in and been farting around with the muzzle loader a little bit, cleaning her up and checking all the stuff that we've acquired, you and I, over the last couple years of muzzle loader shooting.
Yep.
So yeah, it's just been nonstop.
Yes.
Nonstop.
Yeah. But if I'm not traveling, I'm licking my wounds, maybe a little bit of a reset, but everybody listening right now, reminder, May 13th, tags are closed, so get them in. And we just talked about that before the show. I put in for my daughter, my wife. I put in for myself, but I just put in for the cool one-off stuff, sheep, moose, mountain goat, because I don't know if I have time. I'm going back to Canada for another moose hunt.
Yeah, and then your daughter's pretty much guaranteed a,
right,
at least a shorter than ears tag, so they're just going to be concentrating on that, and then... Yeah.
Got to get her dialed on
Oh, man.
I got her a 6.5 Creedmoor.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So
nice. I was going to offer up my 243 or something.
Oh,
6.5.
Yeah.
6.5 Creed, that'll take care of it.
Both she and Cynthia. And Cynthia has a 308.
That's a smart girl.
Yep. She loves that gun, but it's a bit much still for Madeline.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was kind of at that thing where, do I get a 243? Do I do that? And then I went, you know, I can do some hand loads for 6.5 Creedmoor.
They're
light enough.
Yeah.
It's not going to bug her at all. I'll do that. And then she can at least get up to elk with it. No problem.
Yeah.
Within a couple hundred yards. So I just went with the 6.5 Creedmoor, and I was like, and worst case scenario, I can find the ammo at Walmart if I forget hand loads.
Yeah.
I mean, any...
Because you've been known to forget ammunition.
No, not me personally. Family members.
Family members.
Family members.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, I know that it's genetic.
No, mine are shoes.
Yeah. Yours are... Yeah,
yeah,
that's
mine
right.
are boots. Yeah, yeah.
Yours are boots.
I found myself hunting in some awkward footwear because I forgot boots.
Yeah.
But no, ammo, I always got ammo.
No, it's going to be a busy season, and it's going to be really cool to see how a lot of these animals react to this winter. Has just been almost non-existent water-wise, and I mean, there's areas now that I've been running around in that were gorgeous green, and I'm already seeing some areas turning yellow.
Yes.
And it's April.
Yeah.
Usually that doesn't happen till late June into July, but we have areas already turning yellow.
We have had I'll call it like a stuttering winter.
Yes.
Where we get like a couple days and you go, oh man, it's on. Cool. Okay. Here's winter. And then we're back to 70 and sunny.
Yeah.
And then just this last week, we had a couple days of drizzle at my house and cooler, low 30s temps at home. But then by the afternoon, it's
in the 60s, high 60s. And you're like, okay.
So that was,
which is not, I'm not going to complain because, you know, we get
well,
a lot of stuff
spring,
done,
but
now, yeah.
That's been the story of the season since November.
Yeah.
You've been out a lot more than I have with work stuff and all that, but I'll be interested to see what the animal condition is coming into like the dog days of summer.
I agree. I plan on getting out in some of these areas that I put in for just to go tool around for a
couple
days, a weekend or something.
Go camp and...
Yeah, just go camp and tool around and just see what things look like, what to expect if I end up drawing these areas that I have the higher probability of pulling a tag in. So we'll see.
What's the general consensus among like people you talk to? What are like some of the primary concerns right now with that weird winter we had?
Water.
Yeah, it's
water's the big thing.
Okay.
It's probably going to be great for, say, antelope hunters, archery antelope.
Because it's going to concentrate them. Yeah.
It's going to push them to where the water is. So yep. The guzzlers or the water, the spring or what have you. I mean, even archery deer. Everything else is dry as a bone.
Water's
going to be an issue. And then later in the season, as they start munching on everything and as everything's turning yellow,
right,
and you know, having zero nutritional value type
bingo,
of stuff,
bingo,
then it's going to become water and food.
Coming up on the show here, we will get into state of the state, I'll call it, on some of the sheep problems going on.
Yeah.
It's across the West. It's
yeah, not yeah, just not just Nevada. Nevada. It's across all the states that are, they're all having very similar sheep issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We will get into that coming up after the break. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. Dave and I haven't seen each other in a couple weeks because we've been both running around. And so I completely screwed up the formatics of the show. Thank you to our show sponsors, Rifle Liberty Arms, Shooting Performance Institute, Truck Envy, and Battleborn Tree Service. And I want to mention right now, if you go into Rifle Liberty Arms and you spend $50 or more, and nowadays, holy smokes, in the right caliber, that's a box of ammo.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's pretty
Michael
easy.
And the crew over there have Nevada Backcountry hats for you. Go over to Rightful Liberty Arms, spend $50 or more, and you will get a Nevada Backcountry hat while supplies last. And the big batch of them is coming back at the end of the month. Think I will be back from Argentina at that point, but I'm not sure. Anyway, we'll make sure to keep listeners abreast of that stuff. One more thing, Dave, before I completely screw this up and lose my train of thought. On the weird winter stuff, I want to bring up something I've seen going out looking for deer. There are, and for some reason it's that herd down there in Gardnerville and Genoa, there are a pile of hard-horned bucks running around. Still.
Yeah, remember
you
mentioning that.
May. I sent you the video,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you sent me the video of that, and I haven't had a chance to do any research on it to figure out why. Because that's not just one or two deer that are still hard-horned. You've got...
Oh, I got half a dozen I've seen.
Oh, easy.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so, and I'm kind of curious myself. Why are these deer still hard-horned?
And why is it geo-specific, or in this one herd, basically?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that's a tough one. In my runnings around, I haven't seen anything hard-horned.
Mm-mm.
And granted, I haven't been really looking for a lot of deer. I've been seeing them anecdotally when I'm out and about, but none of them have been hard-horned.
I've seen for sure bucks with the pedicles where you know, like, oh, okay, he's dropped, like, they're healed up and everything.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, you can see that little flat zone on their head. So, but yeah, that's
hard-horned.
That's wild. Like, full-on hard-horned. They still have all their antler.
Yep.
And you showed some smaller fork and horns, a nice 3-point in the group. Yep. I'm like, okay, so these aren't just old deer stags that are just holding on to stuff. This is full spectrum of age classes. So.
And it's that Genoa Gardnerville herd, I'll call it. Yeah. From basically, like, I think the farthest north, the 3-pointer was Jack's Valley by Genoa. And then down basically south end of Foothill, right by California there. That's as far south. But in that stretch, just seeing hard-horned bucks still. Yeah. It's crazy.
I'll have to research that and ask some questions and stuff and see what might be causing that.
I wonder if Cody Schroeder.
Yeah, Schroeder. I was going to definitely get a hold of Cody about it and then do some research on it, but it's definitely intriguing.
As of this morning, my dad sent me a video of, now this one only had one side, but he still had one side on him.
Yeah.
And he was just cruising across my dad's lot.
Yeah.
Hard-horned. Yeah.
Interesting.
Weird.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to find out.
So I don't know if that's a winter thing, but then I don't know. It's not happening in other areas I've seen. So anyway, weird stuff going on. Let's get to what we're going to talk about for the remainder of the show. Sheep stuff.
Yes.
Across the West.
Yeah, pretty much across the entire West, there's just these bighorn sheep herds are dealing with several real serious overlapping problems that are kind of going along. And the biggest one, as probably most folks know, is the pneumonia.
Yeah.
It's disease. Disease is the number one big thing to deal with, the infections in these populations. And it's primarily like respiratory, you know, and it's not just affecting the sheep. I mean, they're generally acquiring it from domesticated sheep and they're intermingling. And domesticated sheep are just carriers. They just have this bacteria.
It doesn't hurt them.
No, yeah. They have this just born with this bacteria and it just kind of hangs out with them. Where wild sheep, you know, their immune system's not adapted to that. So when they get it, you know, they get the runny nose and they get that hacky coughy thing. It may not kill them, but it'll definitely
kill the young, right?
Well, yeah, that's the big issue is that in the reproductive cycle, the young will get it.
Right.
And it just, the recruitment is insanely poor. That's one of the big issues.
Would I be wrong in saying, didn't we talk about this? They've identified now where it's becoming more and more of an issue because they're finding wild-to-wild transmission, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes. Well,
yeah.
And that's one of the big issues because I know we've had some conversation about Nevada now having ram management hunts.
Yes.
We'll get into that. But, you know, the pneumonia, it lingers in the herd, and it can linger for years and decades. It just sits in there, and it may not be to the point where it's killing them. It's allowing them wild-to-wild transmission. So you may have a healthy herd on this mountain range and one that's carrying the bacteria on this side.
But looks healthy.
It looks healthy.
Yeah.
And one of them meanders over, and it's kind of like a wildfire. If you think of it as a wildfire where you have these embers kind of floating around and they just kind of start new fires in new locations.
Yeah, miles away.
Right. These are these sheep that are kind of moving around and going into other herds. They're the ember. And then as soon as it lands, it just lets it loose. And now that other herd is now infected. So
this has been going on for, I mean, decades at this point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What's the crux of the problem or where are we struggling to get a handle on this stuff?
Well, the problem is dealing with it as a wildlife manager or a manager in general. Trying to deal with these problems is insanely difficult.
How so?
Well, because you can't just go into a herd and pull the ones that are ill, test them, and determine, okay, these guys are the ones that are all sick. Let's pull them out of the population and everything will be fine. You know, it becomes a very taxing, and not only that, but time-consuming.
Financially, I'm sure.
Financially, and crazy amounts of money.
Firing up helicopters.
Yeah, and the agency's already spent god-awful amount of money on trying to get ahead of these issues, and it's one of those ones, it's almost like a phantom. You don't realize how fast it's moving until it's almost too late.
Okay.
So it is insanely difficult to manage and deal with because in some of these areas, the bacteria, which is a mycoplasma, it's causing total lamb die-off, like zero recruitment.
Mm.
So that's one of the causes for some of these management hunts.
Do we have an immunization or like a vaccine or anything?
There are some things out there. Again, it's kind of like, you know, it's very difficult to do. You just can't go in and just inoculate every single sheep in the state. You don't have the amount of time to do that. You don't have the finances to do that. And all you have to do is miss one. You miss one and that's it. It's back to, you just started the cycle back over. It's kind of
similar. Even if the rest of the herd is immunized.
Well, yeah, but the thing is it's not a one and done deal. It's kind of like, you know.
Oh, gotcha.
It's like with the feral horse thing that we're like, hey, we're going to
sterilize them.
Yeah. Well, they have to have that inoculation every year.
Over and over, yeah.
Right. Well, okay.
Yeah.
You're not going to inoculate them all. And then you're not going to go back next year and inoculate them again. And then the year after, inoculate them again. For one, way too much stress on them. If you've ever captured sheep, they stress out so darn fast.
They call those guys the muggers or whatever?
Yeah, the muggers, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of factors. Other things that are affecting our sheep populations across the West, obviously, is habitat loss through development and all of our human activities and expansion of recreation and such. And then, obviously, the competition with livestock, primarily goats and sheep that are carrying this. And then the feral horse issue in the state is out of control. and they are taking over some of the primary sheep water holes and feed areas, causing an insane amount of stress on these poor sheep. And therefore, you know, when you're stressing, you don't have the nutrients and you're not getting what you need, what's that happen? You end up allowing disease. You know, it can hit you a little harder.
Let's see. We're getting to the end of this segment. I'll let you go ahead and finish up, and then I got some nits to pick.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we can get into, probably wait till the next segment to really hit the management ram hunts and why we're having them.
That's why we're having this discussion now.
Yeah. But, you know, the big thing is, and this is across all of our Western states and all their sheep populations are having these issues. Like I was saying, it is insanely difficult for managers to get ahead of it or even try to stabilize it at all. And there's a few ways that folks have been doing it across the country. Or not, they haven't actually been doing it. These are like things they've been trying in order to get ahead of it or to manage it the best they can. Most of them are not working because you're not hitting the main issue or getting to it soon enough.
What's that they call it? Yeah, addressing the symptom, not the cause.
Correct.
Or whatever.
Yeah. They have issues where, you know, they're trying to separate wild sheep from domesticated sheep with, you know, talking with ranchers and stuff. But a lot of times, it's not like the sheep comes up on the top of a ridge. It's like, oh, hey, guys, there's those domestic sheep, man. We got to stay away from them. They got the cooties.
We can live in the dirt, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even if you pull the sheep out and you go, hey, you're good to go. I don't know how long it lives in the dirt, but I know it lives in the dirt. So, anyway, hey, we have got to take a break. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. And we're back on Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. Thank you to Rightful Liberty Arms, Shooting Performance Institute, Truck Envy, and Battleborn Tree Service for sponsoring the show. I want to throw out there that Jim at Shooting Performance Institute has posted the Hunter's Challenge dates. I've been trying to share the stuff on social media as I go. Bunch of cool prizes this year, so go to shootingperformanceinstitute.com and sign up for that Hunter's Challenge. Now, I said I had some nits to pick. I don't want to turn this into a feral horse episode, but I would like to point out, and I'll plug the new news with Greg Neft and my dad, Jerry Evans,
new show on
KKFT.
That's a good one.
Here's what I want to bring up. I can't remember if I talked to him or not. I was in such a rush to get out of here. A couple weeks ago, before I went to the Keys, he had a conservative, quote unquote, I'm using air quotes for those that can't see, conservative politician, a female, I forget her name, forget what she was running for. Greg asked her about her stance on wild horse roundups. And she took the, you know, the politically correct, oh, these wild, da da da. Anyway, it makes me freaking insane. You are either pro native wildlife or you're pro feral horses. There's no distinction anymore. With that being said, this sheep issue, these are the species that are getting pinched. You got a water problem, horses destroy water sources. You got a feed problem, they destroy food plots. Mm-hmm. To help the sheep, we need to start dealing with this issue. And am I wrong to say we are basically overpopulated by double at this point now?
Oh, way more than double.
Way more than double.
Way more than double.
Yeah. Oh, the carrying capacity.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay.
Way.
It's a massive issue.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm starting to get to the point where I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. If I hear the words wild horse come out of your mouth, I'm not voting for you because it's absolutely insane. The money needs to go to sheep. That was one of my gripes. I'm off my soapbox now because I don't want to turn it into a feral horse thing. But man, sheep need all the help they can get. Anyway, Dave, with that out of the way, let's go back on the sheep thing.
Now we'll get back on the sheep. So you were asking, like, what can you do about some of these?
Yes.
And some of the stuff that has been tried is separating from domestic sheep, like we were talking about. The issue is, or you're trying to create buffer zones and stuff. But the issue is they don't know. It's not like, we were saying, they don't know not to mingle. It still happens, and it can kind of linger in the soil and on the vegetation.
And any idea how long that is?
How long what?
What the half-life is for, like, okay, it's in the soil now, how long it can lay dormant?
No, I don't know that. I know that the tough part with actually eliminating this is that this type of mycoplasma, it doesn't really have a cell wall, so it's very difficult. It's a very difficult bacteria to fend off or to get a hold of. It just doesn't have a real end point.
Okay.
You know, once they have it, they have it. If it doesn't kill them, they end up becoming carriers. And then if you don't get to those carriers and move them out of the population or do something with them, eliminate them completely, whatever, it just continues the cycle. The cycle just keeps rolling. And then as that population keeps moving along and still has this issue, then they end up having a zero recruitment because all the young, all the newborns, they're all dying. All the lambs are dying.
Right.
So eventually the population just disappears if they don't get into other populations and keep this spread just cruising across the landscape.
And am I wrong in thinking that essentially, as far as my understanding, there's no rhyme or reason to when and where it presents itself? Like they could carry the thing for 2 years and then all of a sudden it becomes an issue.
Yeah.
So there's no...
And that's some of the challenge of actually managing this and understanding the herds and how to address it is that they always ask, like, hey, if you see sheep that have like runny noses or have that specific cough or something.
We've posted a video of it. Yep.
You know, let them know. Because, some of the carriers, they get to the point where you can't tell that they have any, but they're still passing it through the herd.
Yeah. And back to your point about how do you wrangle them and immunize them and everything.
Yeah.
How do you test them? What are you going to do?
Yeah. I mean, there's ways of testing them.
Right.
The thing is like we were saying, if you miss one, all of your testing, I mean, you may have slowed it down a little bit, but that one is now going to propagate that and just move it through the herd again. So then you got to readdress it. So it becomes very difficult.
Well, you could test one weekend and they come into contact with something the next weekend.
Right.
And then it's like that herd was good. Now it's not.
And now it's not. So a lot of it is like monitoring, like long-term surveillance with like GPS collars and tracking them and repeat health checks and stuff, which most Western states are doing.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of low-hanging fruit in a sense. I mean, it's an expensive thing, but it's still low-hanging fruit. And then just doing research, trying to improve the vaccine against the mycoplasma and understanding the genetic resistance because, you know, the sheep are genetically resistant to it. And some of the sheep, now some of the bighorn sheep are becoming that way. That's why it's like bighorn sheep to bighorn sheep. And then better diagnostic testing. You know, it's the beginning stages of this. It's been happening, you know, for a decade or so or more, but it's still it's still relatively new across the landscape. So getting better diagnostic and easier, less stressful diagnostics on sheep populations is going to be key. But now getting into why Nevada has these ram hunts. We have two new ram management hunts.
Yep.
And the hunts are designed to depopulate these two herds. And the reason is because the disease risks to adjacent healthy herds in the area. Some of the herds that are adjacent to these infected herds are fine. They're free of this bacteria. The hunt is designed to eliminate that entire herd. Just pull the whole thing, just get them all out of there so that we can protect the adjacent herds. This is becoming incredibly difficult to manage and to the challenges, not only in time, but in cost. So the North Pancake Range, the Desert Bighorn herd there, and then the Pioneer area, I'm trying to read my little note here on where that particular is. So they've been overlapping with other herds, wintering domestic sheep that are in that area that have grazing rights. So that's kind of like a big bomb waiting to go off. That's the main reason for this management hunt that they're having. So we can try to get a better handle on this chronic mycoplasma. Now, the chronic part is it's persistent and long term, not going to get rid of it unless you do this particular elimination.
Well, and you're talking about they want to get rid of the entire herd in there, essentially.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So why not? I mean, as a layperson, not involved in this stuff as my 9-to-5, I look at that and I go, holy smokes, sell the tags for, something reasonable. I don't know, a grand a piece. You can buy a tag and you can just hunt. This month is for this tag holder and starting now. Let's clear this herd out. Why go through the contrived difficulties of an application, a season and dates and all this stuff? Why not just first come, first serve, you bring a grand to the table, you get a sheep tag, it's this herd.
That's above my pay grade, man.
That's crazy to me.
I don't know. I'm not sure why. There's got to be some reasons. I mean, that all of this stuff has to go through the Wildlife Commission.
Right.
And they lead the charge in regards to if and when and how a lot of these processes are done.
Yeah.
However it's presented to them, they can modify it. They can request changes. How they came to this, just adding it to it, creating another hunt out of it, that I don't know that process.
Seems like the red tape in this instance could potentially cost us more sheep herds.
Only time will tell.
Two cents.
Well, yeah, hey. Only time will tell. And I mean, the kicker is having something like this come up. I mean, they've been talking with the grazing community, the wool growers, all of them about
predominantly Basque. Yeah.
Yeah. Shifting domestic sheep grazing in the winter and kind of moving things around. I'm not sure how those discussions are going. It doesn't sound like it may be going well because we're having to do
management hunts. Right.
So, and the decision was to do a whole herd depopulation, which is pretty much called like the nuclear option. And that causes a lot of public outcry, you know, generally from individuals that may not understand the foundation of why this is happening or why this needs to be done. You know what I mean? They're just like, you're going in and just slaughtering all of this, these animals, these poor, helpless animals. But when you
get down, we're giving people an opportunity to put meat in the freezer.
Yeah. I mean, and the big thing is it's going to help get rid of this chronic infection that just lingers for decades and just gets moved across the landscape. This isn't going to solve the entire problem across the state, but it's going to start the process in managing certain regions and helping understand where the next place that we need to focus on so that this doesn't become an absolute bombshell.
We are up against the clock. Do not go anywhere. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry is coming up next. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. And do not forget, hey, you got to get some ammo. You need a new firearm for a kid that's getting into hunting. Go see Michael at Rightful Liberty Arms. If you spend $50 or more, you will get a free Nevada Backcountry hat while supplies last. And there is a restock coming at the end of the month. I'll make sure I get those over to him. Man, we get a lot to sheep stuff. We could do show after show after show on sheep stuff. I've got my knuckle dragger simpleton solution to everything, which is sell tags and give people an opportunity to hunt.
Yeah.
You got to get rid of a herd? Let's do it,
yeah,
baby.
Which, I mean, we don't know yet what the quota numbers are going to be for these hunts because they're brand new hunts, brand new out there. I don't know. It may be because I put in for them. Why not? You know, don't know what the quotas are. I'm not entirely sure how large these particular herds are. Generally, it's not going to be like hundreds of animals. There's probably a fair amount. But like we said, you only need one to move around. The beauty is it's a short term. I don't want to say short term, but it is a uncomfortable thing that has to be done or a fix, this particular fix.
Mm-hmm.
And we see it now as, oh my God, our herds are going to be decimated. This is horrible. We can't believe this is happening. But we have to look at it as a longer term plan. So if these two herds can be depopulated, get these animals out of there, let that habitat sit for a little bit, then we can translocate good, healthy animals into those prime locations that were once occupied by an infected herd. And in the long term, the sheep herds can be better, you know, but in the short term right now,
sheep got to go.
And everyone sees this as like, oh, doom and gloom. Oh my God, this is going to be horrible for our sheep. Well, you got to look at the long term. Sometimes you got to do some stuff that's uncomfortable.
You got to crack a few eggs to make an omelet.
I was trying to figure that one out. I'm like, God dang it. I know there's a phrase or a saying to that one. But yeah, you've got to do that in order to see the benefits that can happen as things move forward. And it's what we've got to do. And then you add in the issues we've had down south with the water issues, the droughts. I mean, these are stressors that are causing some of these diseases to just blow up. You know it yourself. When you're sick and you're stressed and stuff, you seem to get sicker when you're stressed out.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, that kind of thing. Or if you haven't been eating well.
Yep.
And, you know, your body just is like, feels like garbage. That's what's happening to these poor sheep. They're not getting food. They're not getting water. It's just not water. Now there's nothing on the ground for them to really eat because it's drying up so fast. So you have all of these variables, these stressing variables happening to these animals. Sheep are the main one that we're talking about today, but it's also happening with deer, and it's happening with antelope, and it's happening with goats and mountain goats. It's across the board, but the sheep right now are the ones that are getting absolutely smoked with this bacterial infection.
And I would point to the reopening of 011, 012, know, one up there.
A lot. There were like the three. The Californias?
Yeah, that's reopened now.
Exactly. So that's a similar, is this something we can look at as outdoors people and hunters that were like, okay, years ago that got shut down because the herds were in bad shape.
Way bad shape.
Shut those areas down. People were freaking out, bitching, freaking, just
the end of the world.
End of the world type of scenario, right? And here we are many years later, those herds are looking great. There are some really nice sheep in there.
Yeah.
And
I mean, there's nothing worth shooting in there, but
I wouldn't put in.
No.
You know, so anyone out there, don't put in. It's not worth it yet. So, but here we are. There's a success story.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
programs that are being set forth by managers do work. They just take time. Biology isn't something you open a door and it's fixed. It's not how it works.
One of my personality flaws is I look at this stuff sometimes and I have that a little bit of that arrogance where I look at these things and I go, man, this is the easiest way to get this done. Why aren't you doing it? This is the simple solution. Hey, get rid of these tags. You got to kill 300 animals, sell 300 tags at $1,000 a pop, make some money, kill the animals, be done, move on. Don't make it contrived. But that's that arrogant, and I don't know what that is about my personality.
You're going to probably throw something at me. That's a liberal attitude, man.
Is that?
Yeah, that's like, my way's the only way, and the rest of you all are just stupid, ignorant morons.
Yeah, fair enough. Hey,
that's it. I'm running to Walgreens right now to get me my purple hair dye.
We don't need a discussion about this. I'm just going to pierce my nose and hand down dictates. That's how this works.
We're done. Yeah.
All right.
The thing is, it's when we get down to it, it's really not about the money. You know, it's nice to have money to help with research and management and stuff like that. But the managers and the biologists that are working on these projects right now are looking at our animals, our habitats, our droughts, the infections. They're trying to get these animals stable and increasing. It's not about the money, like selling the tags for a grand or whatever. Our focus is getting these herds either out of there or healthy, or removing it and bringing in
healthy animals
that then will propagate, and then we can expand these herds and start seeing like what we were in the past. So
I don't think it's a disagreement on end state. I think for me, it's a questioning of the mechanics of it and how it's going to be done.
Yeah.
I think that's where I get sometimes.
Well, and right now we don't know, we don't know how many tags are putting out.
Oh, they might put out 200 or
right.
something.
Right. Who knows? They might say, okay, how many animals have we got in there? Okay, we got 55 animals in there. Okay, let's put out 110 tags.
I would point the logical fallacy of we got to get this herd out of there, but we only have a management ram hunt, not a management ewe hunt.
That's true.
So if we got to get the herd out of there, what are we doing, people?
Yeah.
Start selling tags and killing sheep.
Yeah. Well, that is that's a valid point.
So
that's a valid point.
I don't know. Anyway, I'm stoked. I put in for the management ram hunts.
Yeah, I did too.
I'm excited. Yeah.
I did too. I mean, we'll see what happens with it.
Yeah, and it's just those two herds right now.
Yeah.
And then what is from this, I'm assuming it's going to be a postseason recap. They're going to count what got killed, what didn't get killed, what survived.
Oh, yeah.
Survey after survey after survey.
Yeah, yeah.
How long traditionally have these management hunts for stuff like this gone on? I mean, are we talking years and years here, or are we talking one season?
That's kind of a sore subject at times.
Okay.
Well, I'm just, and the reason I say that is because I've had conversations with folks over the years, probably same as you, that approach and ask questions like, why is this still a management hunt? Why is this a depredation hunt? Why is this? We've had a depredation hunt in this area since 1998.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah. When does it not become a depredation hunt? if you guys are wanting animals out of these areas because of agricultural purposes or right. or farming damage or what have you, why are you only giving out 10 tags when there's 300 animals in the area? So there's that whole back and forth. How long this particular management ram hunt program goes on, I don't know.
I've seen two seasons and then it goes away. A hunt that was there, a management hunt or depredation, right. where it's two seasons and then went away.
Yeah.
I think that's the shortest I've ever seen, though.
There's other situations where they may have the hunt, provide it to the public to go in, take care of certain animals, you know, hopefully get a chunk of them out of there. And then afterwards, they send in the group that goes in and just lays waste to the rest.
Gotcha.
Kind of like the Catalina Island deal.
Yeah. I hate that stuff. Yeah, oh, I know. That? And I hate that stuff. Yeah.
Flying around in helicopters, just whacking the daylights out of anything.
And
that
the
moved.
Mule deer and
mule deer.
I hate that stuff because I'm like, man, don't. Give people the opportunity to.
Yeah.
Don't spend taxpayer dollars. How about we decrease the deficit a little bit and we add that back into the public coffers.
Yeah.
And let people go whack these things.
Yeah. And that's stuff that I'm just not privy to. And I'm not sure how those mechanisms are, but you know, there's reasons for it. There's, you know, they're not shooting from the hip, just kind of like, hey, let's.
Somebody at some point, I would like to talk to that somebody, but I've never found that actual somebody. Yeah,
that actual somebody.
Despite it's, prodding and prying.
It could
be
AI. I mean, nowadays, it could be AI.
Are
Who
we
knows?
Living in a simulation?
You could be. Potentially. You know, that movie, The Matrix, was legit.
Hey, that is going to do it for us on this Sunday. Sincere thank you to the show sponsors. Thanks to all of you who take the time out of your day to tune in. Coming up next is Tom Gresham's Gun Talk.